Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's Wednesday, November 16th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, big news off the top from last night. Guardians manager Terry Francona, for the third time in his career, for the third time here in Cleveland, has been named American League Manager of the Year. 17 first-place votes for Tito, well-deserved with the job that he did, taking the youngest team in the majors to a division title and a playoff spot. Just an all-around outstanding job by Tito, winning his third Major League Baseball American League Manager of the Year award.
Yeah, definitely, Joe. You hit the nail on the head there. May have been Francona's best job as a manager in Cleveland. A lot of people feel that way. And just think, Joe, 10 years in Cleveland. Has a decade in Cleveland baseball ever gone this fast, gone by this fast? I mean, it's just he's had nine winning seasons out of 10, taking a team to six postseason appearances, four division titles, one pennant, and he's become the winningest manager in Cleveland history. So that's quite a resume in a decade.
We talked to Chris Antonetti a few moments ago, and he stressed and he sort of reiterated, we know that Tito doesn't like to talk about himself and doesn't like awards like this just because, he doesn't want to talk about himself. He'd rather talk about the organization. But Antonetti stressed how critical and how important Tito is to not just the organization, not just the team on the field, but to the city and to everyone around who follows this team, just how much Tito means to all of them. And, it's hard to overstate just what this one guy and his leadership and his sort of direction have meant to this club over the last decade.
Yeah. It seems like, there was a trend a while ago where, younger managers were coming into the game, managers that really hadn't had any experience, even in the minor leagues managing, and the idea was that they were almost, kind of puppets on a string, being controlled by analytically driven front offices. But Tito is goes against the grain there. But, he is one of those rare cases where, he has melded his past, which is a traditional past, managed in the minors, worked up through as a coach, minor league manager, big league manager. He has melded himself into, this front office. They work together so well that he has accepted the analytics, but he is still very much, I would think, he always says guys like Sandy Alomar have more control or more say in their jobs as a first base coach than any first base coach in the big leagues. I think probably the same goes for Francona as a manager. I think, I don't know if he's an equal partner with Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff and the rest of the front office, but I think he certainly has his say. Don't you feel that way, Joe?
Yeah, I think the relationship between those three, between Francona and Antonetti and Chernoff, they're able to work so closely together, and they, even when at the beginning of the season when, you know, it sort of wasn't clear what they needed to do, what they were going to do in terms of bringing on the younger players and sort of committing to that young roster. Antonetti and Chernoff sat Tito down, allowed him to have the ability to wrap his head around what their vision for this was. And then Tito could go forward and explain it to the other coaches and say, okay, now we need to get everybody to buy in. And that's exactly what happened. He got the young guys to buy in and, you know, this is the way we're going to win. We're not going to hit home runs. We're going to, you know, make contact. We're going to run the bases. We're going to play defense. And it worked. And this is a very rare situation. And it led to this award, I think, because you have to have an extreme amount of faith, not just in your front office, but your players and your coaches, that everybody is pulling the same direction. And, you know, Tito sort of worked all of that. He managed it. He was the conductor. He didn't play the instruments necessarily on the field, but he absolutely conducted it like a symphony. And it was a virtuoso performance for him from day one. Absolutely. They care about him. Tito and Cherney and Chris Antonetti, it's not just a really good working relationship. I mean, when Tito wasn't healthy, you know, you could see these guys were hurting just as much as he was along with him. So to see him finally healthy and working through this season, having everything just sort of click all in the right direction, it was a sight to behold this year.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, as Antonetti said, when we talked to him, you know, I think it's, you know, every season it's kind of follows a similar path with since Francona has been a manager. You know, the first half of, you know, the team kind of, you know, finds the style they want to play. They fit the pieces together in the bullpen. You know, they get the back of the rotation set, who's going to platoon where. And then in the second half, you know, you see, you know, that unit come together and start playing better. And that was the case, you know, this year as well, when, you know, they went down the stretch and just hammered, you know, their closest rivals in Chicago and the Twins. And just really, you know, this division wasn't given to them. You know, they took it. And I think that had a lot to do with, you know, the first half of the season, you know, establishing the way they were going to play. You know, Francona, you know, giving that, you know, the, you know, giving that his coaches the ability to, you know, to teach that style and the players to accept it. And then you saw what happened in the second half, and, you know, they were one of the best teams in baseball, you know, when the season ended.
Yeah. Tito repeatedly during the season came down and said, you know, when a rookie or a younger player did make a mistake running the bases, or, you know, not tagging up when he was supposed to, or, you know, any one of a number of things. We saw examples of Tito letting, you know, as a guy came off the field, maybe DeMarlo Hale, the bench coach, would follow him into the dugout and talk to him for a second. And Tito said, hey, if DeMarlo's talking to him already, I don't need to come in and say anything on top of that. I know DeMarlo can handle it and is going to say what needs to be said. And I don't want these young guys feeling like we're piling on them, because that's not productive either. And I think he did a fantastic job of that throughout the season, letting his coaches coach and be the voices in their ears, so that Tito didn't have to come over the top and sort of you know, yell at guys when things weren't going the right way. Now, if there was something that needed to be said, he absolutely said it. But just having that feel with this young club, and he's coached veteran teams in the past. He's managed, you know, bigger names and bigger situations in the past. This was a textbook in, you know, how to manage a young club at the major league level. I think for years to come, this can be held up as an example of, hey, do what Tito did and you'll be all right with some of these guys.
Yeah. And it also goes to show, you know, you can be the greatest coach in the world, but if you don't have talent, young or old, you know, the message is going to fall flat. And I think it's a reflection on the farm system and the player development people, that they were able to, you know, you know, develop these players and give them the green light and convince the front office that it was time for these guys to play, time for Kwan to play, and time for, you know, Jimenez to get to play every day and either at second base or you know, at shortstop, and just open the doors for these guys. Because, you know, we saw that, and you know, we've seen a lot of rookies come and go, but we've never seen 17 guys make their big league debut, and so many of them play important parts on the ball club. And, you know, I think it's just a testament to the drafting system, the farm system, and the player development people.
Yeah, that was sort of the feeling around this time last year was, well, you added 11 guys to the 40-man roster. You know, how are you going to get playing time for all these young guys? How are you going to get eyeballs on these guys and evaluate them at the major league level? You know, there's only a certain number of at-bats to go around. And they really did manage that throughout the season. And they opened things up for the young guys to come through and play. Speaking of opening up opportunities and giving guys chances to play, the 40-man roster additions were announced. A couple of trades happened. Most notably, the organization's former top overall prospect in Nolan Jones was dealt to the Colorado Rockies. Juan Brito, a middle infielder who hadn't played above A-ball, is the return in that Nolan Jones trade. What did you think about Chris Antonetti's response when asked about dealing his former number one overall prospect?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. You know, first of all, he said, you know, when they signed Jose Ramirez, you know, that kind of took third base, Nolan Jones's, you know, primary position away from Jones. Then they had to start moving him around, trying to find other positions for him. And I think he just got pushed out of the organization, Joe. I think, you know, Oscar Gonzalez came up and took over right field. You know, Will Benson is still on the 40-man, but we don't know for how long. But, you know, left field and center field seem to be, you know, in the hands of Kwan and Miles Straw. And I just think, you know, you've got Valera coming. And I just think, you know, they ran out of spots for Nolan Jones. And hopefully, you know, he goes to Colorado and gets a swing down and, you know, cuts down his strikeouts. You know, he's a great athlete, but let's hope but he's got to learn how to hit, you know, he's got to make contact. He started out well here. Then he kind of struggled and Gonzalez came up and just took the job away. That's how I saw it anyway.
Yeah. Gonzalez really sort of blocked him at the major league level in terms of right field, because that was a spot where he was going to play. You know, he made his debut in July, and while Gonzalez was on the injured list, and you know, once Oscar came back, he just kept hitting and stayed in right field. Jones had nowhere to go. I asked Antonetti, you know, other than learning how to hit right-handed, I guess, you know, what could Jones do to get on the field? Because that would have been, you know, one thing that could have helped him, maybe if he could have been a right-handed hitting first baseman. Maybe there's a spot there, but that it just wasn't meant to be. They moved on and they get Juan Brito in return. Now, stop me if you've heard this before, but an athletic middle infielder is coming back to the organization. This time a high A prospect, number 30 overall for the Rockies. And the part that intrigued Antonetti the most about Brito was that he had a little bit of emerging power, I guess. 11 home runs last year at high A. He's a guy who has more walks than strikeouts and can hit in the upper 200s, close to 300 on a consistent basis. You know, where does Juan Brito fit into the plans here? Obviously, Andrés Giménez is your second baseman of the future.
Yeah, he's going to have to take a number and get in line, Joe. I mean, you know, there's like 15 guys in front of him, I think, you know, unless we're seeing something, you know, unless, you know, they saw something that you know, we don't know about. But, you know, it just seemed like, you know, this is the team that collects middle infielders, and they added another guy to the collection. And it's impressive that, you know, he has that, you know, it looks like he's a contact first guy. You know, he has some, you know, he can hit, and they do need some, like you said, some emerging power. But Geez, oh man, Joe, I think, you know, he's far away. He's a ways away, don't you think?
Yeah, on the surface, it looks like he fits with what they're doing organizationally in terms of controls the strike zone, you know, can put the bat on the ball, that kind of stuff. But they have him on the 40-man right now, which is kind of weird in that he's not played at AA yet. And usually they don't really reserve those roster spots, those 40-man spots for guys in his position. I'm wondering if maybe he could be a package piece for another trade coming up, if that's a possibility, because, you know, you're really just sort of hamstringing yourself again with a young guy on your 40 man who he's taken a spot away from, you know, maybe somebody who you like within your organization, or if you're looking to make a trade, there's possibilities there as well. I don't know maybe how long he stays with Cleveland if they turn around and flip him maybe to somebody else.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, Antonetti said that, you know, if they had not added him to the 40 man, you know, they probably would have lost him in the Rule 5. You know, it's an interesting piece. It's an interesting thought that he could be added in a trade. It makes sense on a lot of different levels for sure.
Right. So that was one trade. The other trade that they made, they sent Carlos Vargas, hard throwing right-handed reliever, who worked his way back from Tommy John surgery last year. He's on his way to the Diamondbacks in return for Ross Carver, a double-A right-handed starter who had a pretty good season, struggle once he moved up to double-A just a little bit. But this is a guy who has a pretty good secondary stuff, breaking pitches that he gets a lot of swing and miss on. Vargas was a guy they stuck with. He was a 40-man roster ad last year, and you know, he's now moving on. But adding Carver gives them a little more flexibility because he's a guy who doesn't have to be on the 40-man at this time, and they can you know, keep him down in the minors and free up a spot that way.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't get to see Vargas. I thought, you know, he had a great arm and he was up for a weekend, but never got into a ball game with Cleveland. I don't think he was ever even added, did he?
He was active. They could have they had him up and warming in one game,
right?
But he didn't. He never made his debut. He was very close to making his debut though.
Yeah, so, you know, like you said, hard thrower. But, you know, we've seen that bullpen come together, Joe, this past season with, you know, Karinchak and Stefan and Henkes, you know, all those three, you know, three hard throwers at the end to go along with Class A. And, you know, maybe they just thought, you know, they needed the roster spot. And, you know, Vargas was expendable in that way.
Well, and you want to have at least one spot on your 40-man open if you decide to pick somebody up in that Rule 5 draft. I mean, heck, like you said, Trevor Stephan, it worked out with Stephan when they picked him up from the Yankees, but that you sort of got to play the long game again with that if you're going to, you know, try and see if you can pull off another deal in that regard. For Rule 5 draft, again, coming up at the end of the winter meetings, first week of December there, so... something to keep an eye on. They did add three players. Two of them, I guess, were sort of no-brainers in Angel Martinez and Joey Cantillo. Cantillo had an outstanding season at you know, Double A. He moved up and early on had a real you know, he was pretty much dominant there at Double A before suffering a shoulder injury and having to shut down for the rest of the year. Martinez went between high A and double A and, you know, just kept hitting no matter where he was. Also just finished up playing in the Arizona Fall League. So two guys who, you know, you sort of expected to be additions to the 40-man roster. Tim Herron, a guy that we heard Tito talk about back in August, we were in Kansas City, and just out of nowhere, he brought up Tim Herron's name during a pregame meeting, and it was interesting. He sort of equated Tim Herron to the potential of a young Andrew Miller, which I thought was kind of interesting. He told a story about Brian Sweeney during a spring training game, called down from the bullpen and said, "Hey, wait till you get a load of this guy." And he said he looks like Miller. He throws hard, big lanky left-hander, sort of like in the Sam Hentges mold. And his strikeout numbers were out of this world. 69 innings. He had 100 and some strikeouts this year. So Tim Herron, sort of maybe an under the radar type guy that they added, and he's going to be on the 40-man roster.
Yeah, he's an exciting guy. I think over 100 strikeouts in 60, 70 innings pitched this past season. So it'll be fun to watch him see where he is exactly. Antonetti said he dominated Double A ball and pitched a little bit of Triple A. So, you know, we'll get to see him in spring training and hopefully during the regular season. Cantillo had a shoulder injury, right, Joe? Antonetti said he's healthy now, and so that'll be good. That'll be great to get to see him too in camp. One of the truckload of players they received in the Mike Clevinger deal.
Yeah, I think he's the last remaining player from the Clevinger deal who hasn't made a debut for the club. Just to see him come up would be interesting as well. And that leaves a couple of guys that we thought might get protected but aren't, that are sort of exposed here. Ethan Hankins, obviously coming off of surgery, maybe they thought that people would be a little apprehensive to add him to their major league roster in the Rule 5 draft. There's other possibilities of guys who are exposed on the roster but might be staying around.
Yeah, there's always that possibility, and teams like Cleveland with deep farm systems that pay a lot of attention to the farm system, are usually kind of picked over in the Rule 5, and they got a break last year, but the Rule 5 is back this year, and it could, it usually does end up, they usually do end up losing a player or two that they value.
Yeah, I think just at the amount of depth that the Guardians have right now in their farm system, it's pretty likely that they're at least going to lose a player or two in that Rule 5 draft. But you're right. They got lucky last year because they avoided the Rule 5 draft. If they had it last year, they would have lost Oscar Gonzalez. And, how different would the season have looked? Especially towards the end there, if they didn't have Oscar Gonzalez playing right field for him.
Yeah, definitely. And I thought, Antonetti gave us some updates on some injuries. Josh Naylor, is out in spring training, still not running full go, but it's given that right ankle a time to, time to heal. And Andres Jimenez is, fully recovered from that broken thumb.
Yeah, interesting that Naylor sort of went and got double checked by the doctor who performed his surgery before the season, and he played the entire season. It sounded funny to say he's not full go in terms of running on his ankle. So was he not full go during the season? Is that maybe there's more to be seen from what he could do? If that was only a percentage of Josh Naylor, then I hate to see what full go Josh Naylor is like when the switch gets flipped.
Yeah. He's going to have to rock two babies, not just one. Yeah. If he's at full go.
Well, let's not remind us about, certain gestures at this point. All right, Hoynesy, we're going to wrap up for today. We'll be back again on Friday with another edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We'll talk to you then.
All right, Joe.